this one, which is our FJ. It's what we call the flatness constraint, and that's what's going to generate translations. And then we have our Gauss constraint, which is this, and we use this relation to write it as capital EAM. And that is going to give our, it's a Gauss constraint which gives internal rotations. And then what we're going to use our canonical relation to see, okay, what happens when we vary these variables with respect to like the translation and the rotation. So that is when we start looking at these quantities, which we looked at, which is we have, also first we can then write our Hamiltonian. Like this. Which is totally constrained, and where the lambda corresponds to our this quantity, and the n corresponds to this quantity. And so we start looking at these things, which are, so we're looking at the variation with respect to lambda, where lambda is the parameter of, or the Lagrange multiplier of the Gauss constraint. And so we did this one yesterday in the lecture, where we looked at the variation with respect to n being looking at the flatness constraint. And for this, so we just said, okay, EAJ is going to, how is it going to behave when we put it, when we act with the commutator on the integral of the Fn part. And then we used our canonical relation to get, which told us that it generates the translations. And then, so the three symmetries we want to, symmetries we want to consider are internal rotations, translation, and diffeomorphisms for this action. And then, so the last one to talk about is the diffeomorphism, which is the Lie derivative acting for when we consider the variation with respect to diffeomorphisms. It's the Lie derivative. And then finally, we looked at the constraint algebra. So we looked at these relations, and what we can say about them is we can say it's closed, given that these are can be said to be zero on the constraint surface. Okay. Might I just had one question on like why this had to be F rather than like G there.
Well, you do the computation.
Yeah.
And then. And also, it's also what your expectation is a rotation. It's a translation.
Yeah.
Just the, you rotate it. Okay, so why do we smear the constraint? And we're going to go back to that because we're now going to go to the Dirac program, and we're going to see that even the basic variable, we want to smear them. And it's because, so when we go then to the quantum theory, usually you don't like when you have deltas, for example, okay? Because we don't really know how to, because in the Dirac program, what you want to do is to promote everything to operators, okay? So if instead of function, you're dealing with distribution, then you're not going to work with really operators. You're going to have this kind of distributional operator, which are not so easy to deal with. Okay, so this is the reason, and I'm going to come back on that now. So just to come back on what Niamh said, why do we want to consider, of course, the three symmetries, which are internal rotation, translation, and diffeo? It's because this action is invariant under this symmetry, okay? So it's really the symmetry of our action. So we start with that. And then what we have seen is that we have two different kinds of constraints, and these constraints are going to generate rotation for the Gauss constraint and translation flatness constraint, and that on shell, the DFAO can be written as a combination of the flatness constraint and the Gauss constraint. So this, again, is what make that 3D gravity is simple, okay? So let's now see where we are and what we want to do. And maybe check also the number of degrees of freedom that we have in our theory. Okay, so we have a kinematical phase space. Defined by so what you just wrote here, so this conjugated variable. Plus we have constraint. Okay, so we are really in the same situation we were with the parameterized particle. We know what is, we have a kinematical Hilbert space and some constraint. So first, let's do a quick counting of degrees of freedom. So how many degrees of freedom do you have here at each point, of course, because then it's, so this can take the value 3. Okay, so here. And then this can take, it's only the spatial coordinate, okay? So it's 2. So you get 2 times 3 times 2 because you get the same. So here, the kinematical phase space has for dimension 12, okay? And then, so how many degrees of freedom are you expecting? We're dealing with 3D gravity, so how many degrees of freedom are you expecting here? Yeah, 0, okay? So 12 minus now 3, minus 3, this is 6, but you remember that since we are dealing with first class constraint, in fact, you should take them into account twice because, of course, we're going to solve this constraint. This is going to give us the constraint surface. So here, this gives you the dimension of the constraint surface. So the constraint surface then... is going to be of dimension 12 minus 6. But then to get the number of degrees of freedom of the dimension of the physical phase space, you need to divide by the gauge orbit, okay? You remember, you need to own your gauge orbit to choose one representant each time. So this means that you take them twice into account. So you get 6 minus 6, so you get 0, okay? So then. As expected.
How do you get the 12? Because 3 times 2 is 6, and then?
Times 2, okay? Because here it's a phase space. It's not the. Here you just take into account the configuration variables, but then on your phase space you have the conjugated momentum, okay? It's like when you have Q and P, okay? It's Q and P, okay? Okay, very good. So. Now, what are we? So this is our starting point, this constraint and the kinematical Hilbert space. And you remember that then what are the steps of the Dirac program? We're going to, is that possible to now have this correspondence, turn this Poisson bracket into commutator? Is it possible directly? And we're going to see that the answer is not. In general, this is, you cannot do this correspondence for any phase space function, okay? And in particular here, what is going to be annoying is that we have, again, this delta function here, okay? So the first step is going to work on what are the basic variable, our basic variable we're going to use to then do this quantization here. And then, of course, if you remember, we have to turn also the phase space variable, or our basic phase space function, it's more than variable, it can be just function here, to operator. So this is step one. And then when you have this, you can compute your, so we have the constraint, and we're going to look if we can define operator. So again, is that possible? And to define the, to go to the physical Hilbert space. So here we have Hkin with a given inner product. And her physical Hilbert space with physical inner product. And here again, so it's like if now we're working on the constrained surface, but now we need to figure out what are the true degrees of freedom. So what are the observables here? Can we get observables and as operators? Okay. So these are the different steps we're going to do. But the first part is going to be already here, where the issue that we have here is that we need to select what are our basic variables we're going to use. Okay, so this is not is a non-trivial step, and we're going to spend, in fact, the lecture on that before going to the canonical case. Yeah.
I have a question. Yeah. So you were saying there that we want to get rid of the delta that we have in the Poisson bracket, but for example, when we were doing QFT, we didn't get rid of the deltas that we had in the commutators of the.
Yeah, but in QFT, you're dealing with integral, the path integral approach. Are you dealing with the canonical? Because here, what is important is what we want to build is operators.
Okay? Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, but still in the canonical approach, we kept those deltas there, I think.
Is it always in the, let me think. Yeah, so let me maybe explain more in detail what also are the motivation to find good, what I call good basic variables, because there are additional motivation to get rid of this delta. But the idea is that once you get rid of the delta, you know that already you don't have then any normalization issue or this kind of things. Okay, so if you can get rid of this already at the classical level, okay, and that you don't lose any information, because of course then the question is, we're going to, instead of here working instead of this connection, you already know we're going to work with holonomies, okay? And the question is, if we're working with holonomy, do we have the same information as working with connection? If the answer is yes, and that then this gives you, you can already get rid of this. Because of course, having this means that you have some infinities going around, and then you have operators which are going to be not always well defined, at least normalizable. Okay, so if we can get rid of this at this stage, of course, this is already a good point. And I'm going to explain also that. So what are the other motivation to what are? So let's now go here, and so the aim is to find what I'm going to go good. Basic variables, or if you want, they are going to be basic function of your phase space variable. Because of course here we're going to, instead of so the connection, you're going to see that we're going to work with the holonomy. And and so the holonomy is a function of the connection. And also, what also something which is different with QFT is that here, what is important is you're going to deal with the Diffeo symmetry. And for example, the Diffeo symmetry is going to complicate a lot, many things. For example, if you have an integration going somewhere with Diffeo, then this means that you're going to have, you need to have, this is Diffeo invariant, you need to put the metric into it, okay? And so if you turn everything as an operator, as soon as you have the metric into your definition, things are also going to get, you can imagine, quite complicated. Okay, so the fact that we're going also in the Diffeo context, we really need to really make things as simple as possible without before going to quantification, because as soon as you're going to get some metric variables or some delta function, this is going to go even more complicated. So really, the aim here is going to smear this variable in such a way that here you don't get any delta, but you don't get also any integration. Okay? You don't want to have an integration here. So this means that we're going to integrate. Is that like, okay, great. We're going to integrate over some surfaces these variables in such a way that you get rid of this delta, but in such a way also that the number of integrations that you have here make that here you just get a number. You don't get the integral, okay? So let me explain a bit. So here we want to have, we want to smear function and another motivation then to the way we're going to define our variable is also going to be the way these basic variables are going to transform under our symmetries, okay? Because since we're going to implement this symmetry at the quantum level, of course, we also want such a way that the resulting question bracket do not involve. So we do not want any delta function, okay? Because then we are going to deal with distributional operator, and this is not so well defined. So if this is possible, we try to get rid of that, but also do not involve an integration. Because in this space, we need a metric to integrate in a special diffeomorphism invariant way, okay? And then it's going to be a complicated operator because in contrary to QFT, now the metric is a dynamical variable, okay? So you don't have a fixed metric, but this is a dynamical variable, so it's supposed to get an operator too, okay? So if we want to, so this is to avoid to have the metric entering in the definition of our operator. Okay. So this is the first things we're going to look at. And then the other aspect, as I said, is that this variable are going to transform so the solution for this, so there is a kind of theorem. So there is a general solution to this problem, which is that to smear the configuration variables so let's choose just k dimensional, and in our case, it's going to be just one dimensional hypersurfaces. And then once you have this, the conjugated to smear conjugated variables over so d minus k. So this is the solution to get that you don't get any integration here. So this is what we're going to do. But let me, so I forgot to say something here. So good basic variable, what does it mean here? This means that here we want some variable so that it's closing, okay? So meaning that you get a kind of algebra, okay? So this is the first step. And also, as I mentioned, since we're going to implement the constraint at the quantum level, we want them that they transform in a simple way So we'll see what does it mean simple way under gauge transformation. Okay, so this is what is going to guide our choice of variable. And this is also what the recipe to avoid these two issues. Okay? Okay, so so this is a general solution. And in 3D gravity, what we're going to get if we do that, it's we're going to work with holonomies as configuration variable and the fluxes as conjugated variables. Okay. And this what is nice is that this coincides with the canonical variables you would use for lattice gauge field theory. Okay. So again, we're going to be able to put gravity using the same language as other gauge theory. Okay, any questions here? So let's build this. So the first part is, okay, so on this diagram, right now we are just at the first arrow with the question mark. Even before going to the kinematical hyperspace, the question is what are the good basic variables? Okay, and as I said, we're going to use this kind of recipe. And in our case, we're going to build these two variables. So let's see in details what I mean by holonomies and how they come from, what are their properties, and why are they interesting. So meaning we want to check that indeed they transform under a simple way, under gauge transformation, etc. Holonomies. So we, and this is obtained by applying this. So our configured variable here in our case is a connection, and the connection is a one form. So it's naturally going to be integrated over a one-dimensional object, so meaning a curve, okay? So we are going to define an holonomy. So here we start from the connection. This is a one form. So we're going to smear this connection over 1D object, which is a curve. And so what is the geometrical interpretation we're going to get? You remember that the connection has been introduced to provide a definition of parallel transport or vector with respect to the internal index here, but this at the infinitesimal level. Okay, we are dealing with. And so now what is going to be an holonomy, what is going to be an holonomy going to do is going to define the finite parallel transport along a path. Okay, so if now I start and we're going to get, so this is going to give us holonomies. We're going to use to define finite in a contrast with connection, which is infinitesimal, parallel transport along a curve. And a curve that here is going to be a curve inside our special surface, okay, our 2D surface. And maybe sometimes I'm going to use gamma for curve, but then at some point, since we're going to deal with curve, in fact, we are going to more generally deal with graphs, okay? And so holonomies are going to be defined on each edge of a graph. So sometimes I'm going to, instead of labeling my holonomy by a curve like this, I'm going to label it by the edge of a graph, so E for edge of the graph. And so what is this object? This object is a function of the connection, and we're going to see how we define it. And it's a SU2 group element here. And already I can give you the result, and we're going to see where this solution comes from. It's going to be the path order exponential where you integrate over the edge your connection. Okay, so this is going to come from the configuration variable. These are going to be the object we're going to work with, but I'm going to give more details in a minute. Just let me mention already what is going to be the result here. So the conjugated variable in our case is the densitized thread, okay? And we are in 3D. We are in 2D here, okay? So 2 minus 1 get also one-dimensional object. So you're going to see that the fluxes are going to be defined also as the densitized thread integrated over a one-dimensional object. But you already see that in 4D, here the hypersurface will be three-dimensional. So we in 4D, we're going to keep the same. So the configuration variable will be the same. It's still going to be a one-form, so we're still going to integrate it over curves. So we're still going to work with holonomies. But the fluxes are going to define differently, because instead of being integrated over a one-dimensional object, they're going to be integrated over a two-dimensional object, so a surface. Okay, so this is going to be the difference in 3D and 4D between the basic variable we're going to use. Okay, so maybe to work here, it's nice now to introduce the concept of Lie algebra valued forms, but I think you're already familiar with that, no? Everyone is familiar with Lie algebra valued form? Or?
I think you can say a little bit about it again.
Okay. No problem. I can. So I'm going to introduce now. So we are still working on giving a bit more details about holonomies, but for this is useful if I introduce this notion of Lie algebra valued forms. And so what does it mean here? Does this mean that now I'm going to, when I have an object with an internal index, I can construct it with the generator of SU2 or SO3, the same thing here, to define this object without indices. So as soon as you're going to see object without indices, this means that you're working with Lie algebra valued object, where here, these are the generator of SU2 or SO3, the same thing at the level of the algebra, meaning they satisfied And so this is, yeah, so this is the first thing I want to say. Now, so as I said, the motivation for introducing basic variables is also to have that they transform in a simple way under gauge transformation. So here you remember that the connection is invariant under translation. So the only transformation we have to look at is going to be the SU2 transformation, the rotation. So let's see what does it mean, because first we introduced at the level of the connection, we worked with a 3D rotation, but now we want to translate that into SU2 group elements. So what does it mean here? So I'm going to use here a property. So we want to look at the transformation under SU2 rotation. So let's look at here, we have a nice correspondence between the adjoint representation, and you're going to see why then it's also useful to use this Lie algebra valued object in a minute, of SU2, but I need first one, and the vector representation of SO3 in on its Lie algebra. And so what does it mean here? This means that we have this nice correspondence here, where if I look at the rotation associated to the SU2 group element acting on, so my, this is just my Lie algebra generators, then you can write it also using the adjunct, where here you really consider that this is matrices, so it's a product, it's a matrix product here, okay? And if you go to the infinitesimal form here, what you're going to get are going to be the commutation relation for the for this generator. You're going to recover that. So from just the relation, you can see that indeed here we have this identification that SO3 is not completely SU2, but it's SU2 divided by plus or minus, or if you want to rewrite, we quotient that with this group. And indeed here you see that if you look at now the rotation associated to the SU2 group element minus G, okay, you see that here you're going to get minus minus. So this is equal again. So if you look, you can show using this relation that the rotation associated to minus G as the SU2 group element is the same as the rotation associated to G. Okay, so this is not really so important for what I'm going to say, but it was just to. Okay, so now let's see what are the transformations for the fields that we have in our theory, meaning the triad, the curvature field, and also the connection. Okay, so what are the fields that we have in our theory which have only one internal index, which are like a vector for the internal group, which transform as a vector? So we have the triad. And also the curvature tensor. So we have internal index J, and so they transform in the vector representation of the group, of the rotation group. So from just what I said before, we're expecting that they transform under the adjunct representation for SU2. So let's check that explicitly. So this means that here we're going to consider the Lie value object and so let's first see for a given vector. So using this relation here, what can I say if now I have a vector we transform under the, so I'm going to contract the previous expression by a vector vk, okay? So this means that I'm looking here as the action of the inverse of the rotation on v. So this is this vector time. And so just using what I have here, this is also so what does it mean? This means that now the action of a rotation on a vector so here it's like using G inverse. So I just get that this is G okay, so just what I'm saying here is that a vector with an internal, so an object with an internal index is going to transform in the vector vector representation of the group. Okay, so this means that. And you can show that this is equivalent to say that it's also transformed in the adjoint representation for SU2. Okay? And so now if we apply this to this object, we are interested.
Can you explain, please?
Yeah. So let me maybe just write what I mean for. So here, this means that under a gauge transformation, okay, you remember that the gauge transformation is a rotation. This means that the Lie value objects are going to transform under the adjoint representation of SU2. And and we can also, so let me just finish that and then I re-explain. So of course the connection is going to be a bit more complicated, but we can also define the Lie valued object. And you can show, so I'm going to come back on this one too, that here you have an additional term. Okay, so these are the way our Lie valued objects are going to transform under a SU2 transformation. Since now, okay, so let's go back to what is the motivation here. So we define this, our basic variable are going to be for the, instead of the configuration variable, the connection, we're going to use holonomies, which are SU2 group elements. Okay? So at some point, we are going to be interested in knowing how our object we have in our theory are going to transform under SU2 transformation. Okay? And also, one really important aspect that we are going to check in a moment is that we want that our basic variable transform in a simple way under gauge transformation. Okay? So here, under SU2 transformation. And so to go on, so this is what we're going to use. But to define really correctly this SU2 holonomies, it's much easier if I introduce this notion of Lie algebra valued forms and for anything, okay? Even the action is going to be written in a much simpler way. So it's what I'm introducing now. So now I'm telling you that as soon as I'm going to have an object with one internal index, when you have an object with an internal index like this, this can be seen as a vector for the internal rotation, okay? So this is quite here. So as soon as I'm going to have an object with an internal index like this, I'm now going to build this new object, which is now in value in the Lie algebra, where I just contract this my internal vector with my generator of SU2. And so now the question is, so I know that this object, they are like a vector for SO3, okay? If I act with a rotation, I'm acting on a vector, okay? So now the question is, how can you relate this rotation, which is SO3, to SU2, okay? Because it's what I'm going to work with now. I'm going to work with, and we have said that we want to consider our theory as SU2 gauge invariant theory, okay? Because until now, everything we have done was at the level of the algebra, and so at the level of the algebra, SU2, SO3 is the same thing, so we can choose, and also here now the holonomy we have defined are going to be SU2 group element. So the question is, how these objects are going to transform under SU2, okay? So under rotation, you know that it will be just, so if I start with a vector, then the gauge transformation, if it's a rotation, I'm just going to say that it's just going to rotate my vector. But if now, instead of a rotation, I'm saying, yeah, but this rotation can be related to a SU2 group element, how this object is going to transform under this just SU2 group element without going to the representation of SO3. And this is given by this relation that you have between the vector representation of SO3 and the adjoint representation of SU2. So just what I'm saying is that now when you have a vector for the internal index, in fact, you can see that the way it's going to transform under SU2 is going to be under the adjoint representation. Okay. So now, if we work with this lead-valued object, instead of saying they're just going to under gauge transformation, they're going to be rotated. I'm going to, under SU2, they're going to transform this way under the adjoint representation. Okay, so this was just what I was trying to say. So I don't know, maybe.
Could you explain why the EA and the AA, although they look very similar, they have different transformation? Because like they are defined also as like.
So the A are the space-time, or the only space here, okay? So here we did that, we were space-time coordinate, okay? And now we look at only the special one. And
it's more like the big, the capital A. Big A, small index A. Has the same definition as big A, small index A. This and this.
Why the connection transforms different from the vector?
They might have the same.
Okay, so if you look at the way a connection is going to transform under rotation, it's not a vector, even if it has a vector index here, it's in fact not a vector. And this is what you're going to check during the tutorial today. You're going to look at the infinitesimal. So if you look now, this rotation is an infinitesimal rotation. This means you want to look at, well, as I said here, I gave you the result already, I think, yesterday. So here it's A now. This kind of transformation where you look at just the Poisson and what are these transformations under infinitesimal rotation, and you're going to see that indeed you're going to be able to make the connection between these derivatives. Okay? So yeah, this can be a bit confusing, but the connection is not transform, does not transform as a vector. And you're going to check that in the tutorial.
Could you explain the implication? We have like VK, R, chi, K.
Yeah, so here it's just because, so I'm starting from this one, okay? And the only free index I have is this K. So I can only contract with a VK this way. But if you look at what is this object, it's not really a rotation R acting on V. It's more, in fact, the way it is contracted, it means that it's the inverse, okay? But as I told you, I'm interested at the action of a rotation of a vector. So this means that I just need to, instead of here, it's like, it would be the action, it's really the action of a rotation if here it's the rotation associated to the J inverse. So it's exactly what I wrote here, okay? In fact, to go from here to here, I just do.
In this case, why we don't have J minus one in the bracket? And by RG,
no, because, am I missing? I think, no, let me, yeah, maybe I missed something. No, I think it's fine because the inverse is here, no? So I'm.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And RG VJ means RGV bracket index J. Because the index is it's surprising here.
Ah.
Very pedantic for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, let's any more question on this, or we can just try to use that to see what we can say now. So here first, what does it mean here when we work now with this object? This means that now we are doing a kind of identification that the tangent space, because remember that this internal index this means that we are on the tangent space at a given point of our manifold. So this means that now the tangent space, more or less, at each point is identified with the Lie algebra SU2, okay? Because now we're going to work with this Lie algebra valued object. So now the question is that, so on the tangent space, so at each point we have a given tangent space and we need to relate each of them, okay? So we want to relate, and so that's why we need parallel transport, and that's how we're going to use these holonomies to really relate the different tangent space at different points. Okay, so let's see what I mean here exactly. So no, I cannot use this blackboard, so sorry. Let's go here. This is okay. Well, hopefully, it's not going to fall on. It's a bit scary, but okay. Let's say that it's going to. So let's go back to this holonomies. So now I'm going to. So given an internal vector that I'm going to call V, where by V I of course mean Vj, Tj at, and this is at a given point x on my manifold. And now I can parallel transport using an holonomy along a curve. I'm going to call this curve gamma s, where here it's s is equal to 0, so it's gamma 0, and until gamma 1. So here I get v prime. And v prime is the parallel transport of v with along the curve. So we know that v prime is the parallel of v along so from what we just said, okay, we know that so v is a vector. So this means that it's going to transform in the adjoint representation. So we're going to define really the parallel transport of V by, so V prime can be seen also as V of S, and V is just V of 0 because of this gamma 0. Where H of S is the holonomy from so gamma 0 to gamma S. And now let's see. So we can use that, of course. So now there are two things that we can do. We can check. So what does it mean that V of S is the parallel transport of V? Can we then determine exactly what is this holonomies, and also what is the transformation under local gauge transformation of the holonomy. So maybe I'm going to start more by the second aspect. So okay, so what does it mean that this vector is parallel transported? So this means that if it's parallel transported, this means that the covariant derivative, the derivative along the curve, so I'm going to explain this in addition. V of S is equal to 0. Okay, so this is by definition because it's parallel transported. So this is the derivative along the curve. And so now we are working with the algebra valued object. So what is this? Okay, if you remember, so this is just the covariant derivative. So for this partial derivative, it's not going to change. And now you remember that the term should be an epsilon ajk, and then you would get a and some v. And but in the term of working with the algebra valued object, you can really write this way. Because what does it mean, this object? What is that? So here, this means that I'm working with, and you're going to see that we're going to recover the usual expression that you're used to for this covariant derivative. So what is that? So this is just, these are just numbers, okay? So this is a commutator, but they don't see the commutator. The commutator is just a product, but these are the Lie algebra generator. So of course they do not commute now. And by definition, this is epsilon A J K. Okay, so what we get here is epsilon and so if you rewrite that this V here is VK TK, okay, you really recover. And of course the derivative is just going to act on this, so you can put that outside. You recover the expression I gave you earlier. Okay, so this is the compact way to write the covariant derivative when you're working with the algebra object, the algebra valued object. Okay, and so this is the derivative along the curve. And by definition, it has to be zero when you talk about parallel transport. So let's see what we can say. So first, this means that we are dealing with a tangent vector to the curve. So this object is just the derivative with respect to your parameter here. Okay. So let's expand this now. I can expand this as, and of course I want to use that V of S is defined in terms of V0. Okay, so the dependence in S can be just put in only into the holonomy. Okay, so V of 0 is going to be a constant with respect to this derivative. Okay, so what is the first term? The first term comes from this derivative acting on h of s, v of 0, h of s minus 1. So what do we get here? So we just use the Leibniz rule. Then v 0. Then we're going to get, so v 0 is a constant with respect to this derivative. And then here I'm just going to use that. So the derivative of h minus 1 is 0. Okay, so you get that d of h. And if you expand that, you get so. H equals 0. So you can now express the derivative of the inverse of your holonomy as a function of the derivative of your holonomy. Okay, so I'm going just to replace here. So what do we get? Minus h minus 1. So this is just this first term here. And then you need to take into account the commutator. And so the commutator is just, we can expand the commutator. So what do we get? We just get of S minus, so now we get okay, so here what I did is really just expand this. And so this is equal to 0. And so from this, I can now deduce the defining differential equation for the holonomy, which is simply given. So if you simplify this, what you get is and you have a well-known solution for this, which is given, so you can do step by step. And then reiterate. Okay, so here, this is not constant, so of course it's not going to be just the exponential, but that's why you're going to get the path integral exponential. So the first step is going to give you that h of s. So here we have this, plus we take the assumption that h of 0 as an initial condition is the identity. So then we integrate over s 0 to s 0, for example. And again, we need to iterate here inside this, this kind of solution. So we're going to get, then we iterate. So what we get is a path ordered exponential, and where we get that the holonomy along this curve is given by where here, what do we have? We have that this is an infinite sum. So we have this minus 1 coming from here, and then we integrate from 0 let me write it, and then I can explain. So Sn. So where the order here is important. And let's start S to Ds1 from here, a product of matrices, where the order of these matrices S to A S1. So sorry if you cannot read here. Where, so let me maybe use this blackboard to write what I mean, how is defined this matrix. A of S, okay, is given where these matrices are ordered from the largest to the smallest parameter from left to right. Okay, so here it's, yeah. So this is the definition of the holonomies, and it can really be obtained just saying that this is what we're going to use to parallel transport a vector along a curve. Okay, and so from now we are not going to work anymore with connection, but we're going to work with holonomy, so I'm going to come back on that. And maybe just in order that this is done, I just want to add something here in the way the holonomy is transforming under local gauge transformation. And you can check that this is consistent. I will come back on that tomorrow, maybe. So here, I just want to add that the transformation under SU2 local gauge transformation okay, so we get that g of x we want to see, so it's local, so it depends on your point. So you see that now your holonomy is going to be along a curve. And you can check that. So you need two different holonomies. So one SU2 transformation at the endpoint. This is, and of course, the fact that you have two different group elements here is related to the fact that here, when you look at the level of the connection, indeed you have this derivative. Okay, so and of course this is important if you want, now if you look at the transformation of this vector, you want that this these two are consistent. Okay, so you can check that this transformation is consistent with this definition here if you perform a gauge transformation on your polynomials. Okay, so I'm going to, so just to conclude what we have done here. So we are starting to, so now we have a kinematical phase space with some constraint, and we want to apply the Dirac program. But before going to the kinematical hyperspace, what we need to find is to find good basic variables. So we are not going to, so the result is that we are not going to use directly the connection, but we are going to use holonomies now. And these are going to be our basic configuration variable. So we are going to define our phase space on this configuration variable. But also, one missing point is that if you remember what is the the solution is to smear configuration variable over k-dimensional, which is one here hypersurfaces, and then the conjugated variable. So we still need to define the associated variable to the densitized triad, which are going to give us the fluxes. So I'm going to do that tomorrow, and then we're going to start talking about what is the kinematical hyperspace. Okay, thanks.